This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist here in New York. If you'd like to make an appointment with me, call the office, 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. You can speak to Grimaldi about setting up an appointment. And you don't have to travel to New York for an appointment with me. I do phone consults with patients and clients all over the country. You're asking, what is the difference between a patient and a client? A patient generally is somebody with medical conditions, real health concerns, and a client is somebody who's looking to optimize their health and well-being and practice more prevention. Get out ahead in terms of, you know, getting in front of any health problems that may lurk, or because of their, say, strong family history of diabetes or heart disease or something like that, that they want to be able to get out in front of and make sure that they don't go down that same path. We call that optimization. So, again, if you'd like to make an appointment with me, 212-779-1744. I am going to dive right in here, and you're not only going to hear about this from me, but from others, as well as Dr. Hoffman. You know, we have to do major damage control against bad science. And this is what we would deem bad science, and, you know, bad science can harm us. This is very unfortunate because this is in an extraordinary peer-reviewed journal, The Lancet. The Lancet, I believe, one of the original medical journals. And this particular study was found in The Lancet. Dietary carbohydrate intake and mortality. A prospective cohort study and meta-analysis. The authors are Seidelman, Claggett, Cheng, et al. So here's a summary. Low-carb diets, which restrict carbohydrate in favor of increased protein or fat intake, or both, are a popular weight loss strategy. However, the long-term effect of carbohydrate restriction on mortality is controversial and could depend on whether dietary carbohydrate is replaced by plant-based or animal-based fat and protein. The aim of this study is to investigate the association between carbohydrate intake and mortality. So what the authors did here is they studied 15,428 adults between the ages of 45 and 64 years in four U.S. communities who completed a dietary questionnaire at enrollment in the Atherosclerosis Risk and Community Study. That's the ARIC study, the Atherosclerosis Risk and Community Study. And this occurred between the years 1987 and 1989. And who did not, pardon me, who did not report extreme caloric intake, meaning less than 600 calories a day or greater than 4,200 calories a day for men, and less than 500 calories a day or greater than 3,600 calories per day for women. Why did they have to exclude these particular subsets? Is because having too little calories or too many calories can be a confounder. Okay. So the primary outcome was all-cause mortality, death by any and all causes. I have to ask myself, I can't help but wonder, does that include, you know, crossing the avenue and being hit by a bus? Anyway, so the authors investigated the association between the percentage of energy from carbohydrate intake and all-cause mortality, accounting for possible non-linear relationships in this particular cohort of people. So, we further examined this association, that is, the authors did, combining the ARIC data, atherosclerosis risk and communities, data, with data for carbohydrate intake reported from 7 multinational prospective studies in a meta-analysis. Finally, they assessed whether the substitution of animal or plant sources of fat and protein for carbohydrate affected mortality. So what did they find? During a median follow-up of 25 years, there were 6,283 deaths in the ARIC cohort, and there were 40,181 deaths across all cohort studies. In the ARIC cohort, after adjusting for multiple variables, they found a U-shaped association between the percentage of energy consumed from carbohydrate and mortality. And what they found is that a percentage of 50 to 55% of energy from carbohydrate was associated with the lowest risk of mortality. In the meta-analysis of all cohorts, which was a total of 432,179 participants, both low carbohydrate consumption, which they defined as less than 40% of intake from carbohydrate, and high carbohydrate consumption, which they defined as greater than 70% intake of carbohydrates, conferred greater mortality risk than did moderate intake, which was consistent with a U-shaped association, meaning those who consumed too low in carbohydrates and too high in carbohydrates had the highest risk of mortality, hence the U shape, right? And at the bottom of that U, which was the, quote, moderate intake of carbohydrates, fared the best overall. So, both high and low percentages of carbs, of carbohydrate diets, were associated with increased mortality with minimal risk observed at that bottom of the U level, which was 50 to 55% carbohydrate intake. Low-carb dietary patterns favoring animal-derived protein and fat sources from sources such as lamb, beef, pork, and chicken were associated with higher mortality, whereas those that favored plant-derived protein and fat intake from sources such as vegetables, nuts, peanut butter, and whole grain breads were associated with lower mortality, suggesting that the source of food notably modifies the association. Where did they get their funding? The National Institutes of Health. And you know, back when I was in undergrad and graduate school for nutrition, we were told that the cleanest money you can get is from the National Institutes of Health. So if you're looking for a grant, the cleanest, supposedly most unbiased grant would come from the National Institutes of Health. Now, we need to expose the bad in this bad science. So first of all, and the first thing that jumps out at me, and listen, I really have to wonder, these scientists use food frequency questionnaires from the 1980s. And I'll tell you, food frequency questionnaires, no matter how much better they've gotten, how well they may have modified them in recent years, they are still notorious for being fallible, for they are not completely faultless. You have to wonder, when you are asked to remember over the course of the last 2 years, how many servings of rice did you have? How many glasses of orange juice did you drink? Who would remember this? Even the sharpest of minds would have to keep detailed food diaries in order to answer these questions. So one of the biggest confounders in nutritional science, and listen, we were taught this in undergrad. The biggest confounders in nutritional science is reliance on a food frequency questionnaire, not just that FFQ, but the span of time. You were asked to answer hundreds of questions about your intake over a 2-year span. Who has that kind of recall? You would have had to have kept detailed food diaries. Okay. So, these participants were recruited between 87 and 89. Study participants were examined at follow-up visits. The second visit occurred between 1990 and 92. And the third between 1993 and 1995, and the fourth visit between 1996, 1998, and the fifth between 2011 and 2013. This study has several different time frames, which are several years apart. Now, you've heard me talk a lot about the strength, the rigor of scientific research depends a lot on its methodology. These methodologies are not great. Participants completed an interview that included a 66-item semi-quantitative food frequency questionnaire. Okay? Participants reported the frequency with which they consume particular foods and beverages in 9 standard frequency categories, extending from never or less than 1 time per month to 6 or more times per day. Standard portion sizes were provided as a reference for intake estimation, and pictures and food models were shown to the participants by the interviewer at each examination. How many servings of chicken did you have, or cake? How much butter did you use? How big is your portion size of pasta? How ripe was the banana that you ate? Because, you know, a very ripe banana has more sugar. What was the size of the banana? A medium banana has 27 grams of carbs. So, you would have to have detailed records for everything you ate for the 25-year length of the study. So, how could this analysis have any meaning? So, the other thing is the statistical analysis. They did a time-varying sensitivity analysis between the baseline AIRC visit number 1 and visit number 3. Carbohydrate intake was calculated on the basis of responses from the baseline food frequency questionnaire. So, from visit 3 onwards, the cumulative average of carbohydrate intake was calculated on the basis of the mean of baseline and visit 3 food frequency questionnaire responses. So, they collected carbohydrate information from the first and third visit, then they estimated the rest based on these 2 visits. What's up with that? Did they not like the data for years 2, 4, 5, and 6? Did that data not match what they would have liked to have seen? So, what kind of confounder is this hiding? And they say, We did not update carbohydrate exposures of participants that developed heart disease, diabetes, and stroke before visit 3 to reduce potential confounding from changes in the diet that may arise from the diagnosis of these diseases. The expected residual years of survival were estimated. Huh. So what they're saying is, so those who ate a lot of carbs and developed diabetes, stroke, heart disease during the study were excluded? This doesn't reduce confounders or confounding changes. It increases them. That is because the very thing they are studying is how carbs influence longevity and health. That is no diabetes, no stroke, no heart disease. And by excluding those that actually ended up with these chronic diseases, completely changes the outcome to the points that these researchers were trying to make. All right, there are a whole lot of problems here. And again, don't forget the three types of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. This falls in the category of bad science. Shame on The Lancet for publishing this. You know, National Institutes of Health, before releasing our hard-earned tax dollars in the form of a grant to this body of scientists, should have investigated the methodology. Really. And this bad science is continuing to be funded. This is unfortunate. And now here's a review in that same Lancet issue. Okay. Evolving science about nutrition and health. In this issue of the Lancet Public Health, Seidelman and colleagues examined the 25-year follow-up data from the Atherosclerosis Risk and Communities, the ARIC study, and placed their findings in the context of a meta-analysis of published studies about carbohydrate intake. The authors conclude that the epidemiological association between carb intake and death is U-shaped. I went over all of that with you earlier, so I'm not going to repeat the same thing that's written in this review. It's the same thing I said earlier. So, such differences in risk associated with extreme differences in intake of a nutrient are plausible, but observational studies cannot completely exclude residual confounders when the apparent differences are so modest. Right? I call that meaningless research. This writer goes on to say, based on the first principle, a U-shaped association is logical between most essential nutrients versus health outcomes. Essential nutrients should be consumed above a minimal level to avoid deficiency, below a maximal level to avoid toxicity, right? This approach maintains physiological processes and health. The sweet spot, you know, if you get too little B6, for example, if you take in too little B6, you're not getting enough vitamin B6, pyridoxine from your diet, you may experience some neurological symptoms. On the other hand, if you're getting too much B6, toxic levels of B6, you can experience those same symptoms. And the sweet spot is right there, right in the middle, Goldilocks, just the right amount of B6. So, this approach maintains physiological processes and health, the so-called sweet spot. Pay attention to this next sentence now. Although carbohydrates are technically not an essential nutrient, unlike protein and fats, a certain amount is probably required to meet short-term energy demands during physical activity and to maintain fat and protein intakes within their respective sweet spots. Yes, you read that correctly, this review in The Lancet. Although carbohydrates are technically not an essential nutrient, this is true, unlike fats and proteins, which we would die without fats and proteins, right? So, going on in this review, in the same issue of The Lancet as this study, the findings of the meta-analysis should be interpreted with caution, given that so-called group thinking can lead to biases in what is published from observational studies, and the use of analytical approaches to produce findings that fit in with current thinking. The ideal approach to meta-analysis would be a collaboration involving investigators of all the large studies ever done, including those that remain unpublished, that have collected data about carbohydrate intake and clinical events, and pool the individual data using transparent methods. This approach is likely to provide the best and most unbiased summary of the effects of carbohydrates in health, rather than reliance on the results of any single study. This author goes on to say future observational studies should also consider new methods, which include triangulation, to assess whether there's a coherent pattern of information about the links between consumption of a nutrient, such as carbohydrates, with a panel of physiological or nutritional biomarkers and clinical outcomes. When appropriate, this approach should be contemplated by large and long-term clinical trials investigating the effects of different dietary patterns constructed from information about the effects of individual nutrients and foods, because the effect of individual nutrients is likely to be modest. When coherent information emerges from different approaches and is replicated, this will form a sound basis for robust public health recommendation. Again, when coherent information emerges from different approaches and is replicated, this will form a sound basis for robust public health recommendations. The question that scientists are investigating need to be replicated. These outcomes need to be replicated over a continuum of different approaches in the scientific research. This confers its rigor, its validity, its reliability in that the outcome is correct. So again, unfortunately, another example of bad science, but then a review in the same issue of The Lancet on how to make it better. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.